cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube and now also on Bloomberg Quick Take.
We just talked about the big bank CEOs, Tim, and in a big way, we are getting a good feel of the outlook from them thanks to that Goldman Sachs conference.
Yeah, if there's one sort of theme that drives them together, it's sort of a downbeat note about the economic outlook. Goldman Sachs Group CEO David Solomon saying that smaller bonuses and even potential job cuts could come as no surprise. He did make those comments, Carol, at the Goldman Sachs U.S. Financial Services Conference here in New York City, speaking exclusively to our Bloomberg's Shanali Basak.
All right, so covering the event as well, Bloomberg News finance reporter Sri Natarajan. He is in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Sri, so first of all, we're all talking about it, and a good reason, these great exclusive interviews by Bloomberg's Shanali Basak. It does feel like they're kind of Debbie Downers, most of these guys.
There's certainly no ifs and buts out here. We've had a parade of CEOs talking to Bloomberg today, and it's clear from their tone and what their messaging has been that they are a lot more cautious. In fact, David Solomon, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, made a point to say that while his firm's own economists believe that we will be able to avoid a recession in the U.S. narrowly next year, he says he himself is a little more pessimistic. And that was clear in the messaging he put out there, that the talk of possible additional job cuts, the need to pay people down, it's not what you were hoping to hear, and one has to wonder.
Is he talking his book and saying, "Listen, guys, we're worried. We can't pay you a lot this year."
That was my first thought too, Carol.
Sorry for being such a cynic.
That's a factor, right? Because we do know that, especially Bloomberg readers know that Goldman has begun compensation conversations, and it is clear that even those who performed really well this year will be paid down because the entire firm as a whole has not done as well as 2021. Of course, 2021 was an exceptional year. But I'm going to run a little bit further away from the cynical lane only because what he said has been echoed by almost everyone else who's spoken with Bloomberg today. And look at the reports out of Morgan Stanley. They're cutting about 2,000 jobs, 2% of their workforce. Not a whole lot.
Right.
But again, job cuts in the news cannot be very fun to hear.
Well, let's go to his words, because Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon speaking exclusively to Bloomberg Shanali Basak on the sidelines of the Goldman Sachs U.S. Financial Services Conference in the city earlier today. Check out what he told her.
We're at a very uncertain time, an uncertain time given we're changing monetary and economic conditions very, very quickly. And that's certainly having an impact to slowing down economic activity. And so if you're running a big financial services firm, I think you have to assume that we have some bumpy times ahead. We could see a recession in 2023 also. And so I think you've got to be cautious and prepare.
That was Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon from the firm's U.S. Financial Services Conference here in New York City. Check out more from that interview on the Bloomberg Terminal and at Bloomberg.com. Carol, you got a smile on your face.
I'm thinking of Bette Davis. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night or bumpy ride. Like that kind of ominous tone. But I do think about, this is something we have said, Sri, what these big bank CEOs have to say as we get ready for the next round of earnings, as we get ready for the next and last Fed meeting of the year. I mean, you've been covering this sector. When they are so negative, does it usually pan out?
To some extent, yes, because I do think that they use these occasions, these public appearances, to try and signal and flag what is ahead. So they are preparing us for what's ahead. But I'll tell you, and you guys tell me whether this read is right or wrong, or actually what your read is. To me, the most fascinating thing in that interview was David Solomon talking about this idea that it should come as no surprise to anyone that they have to pay people down this year. That is going to happen definitively, while also repeatedly saying in that interview...
Record year?
In the remarks. Not necessarily record year, okay. But this idea that there is this massive competition for talent. What's the point of saying that? Is that him signaling that there is still room for tinkering and he could still potentially tweak the compensation pool to make it look better? Or is he telling people who are complaining and whining, if you really want to complain, I'm telling you the pay pool is going down. The market out there is great. You're free to go ahead and find a job out there. I don't know. What do you guys make of it?
That's I like that sort of cynical view of it, but I do wonder how you explain the distance between what the firm's own economists say versus what the CEO says.
It's interesting that now I'm the cynic in-house. I thought that was Carol, so that's unfortunate.
Well,
You have to read between the lines here, Sri.
I will say this, Tim, though. I think David Solomon's always had this posture of being more cautious, even when things are going great. Through the run-up we'd seen in the post-pandemic times, every quarter David Solomon would come out and say, it has been great. We're not certain that that pace can be maintained next quarter. And yet quarter after quarter after quarter, these big banks perform really well, and Goldman Sachs in particular. So I personally, having observed him closely for 4 years, I'm not that surprised that he would strike a more cautious note than his economists. A little surprised that he is going away from the script, because he tends to stick to what the economists say and often says, I don't have a crystal ball. But the fact that he was willing to be a little more downbeat was easily explained in everything else he said in the interview. The idea of the pressure on cost, the cost cuts, the commentary he had on the pay pool, that kind of shows you why he would be more cautious.
All right. Well, having said that, and speaking of cautious tones, our Sonali Basak also caught up at the conference with the CEO of Bank of America, Brian Moynihan. Great clue in terms of how consumers are feeling as well. So here's what he had to say about inflation and higher rates.
The evidence shows that, yes, the economy is being slowed by the higher interest rates, by the fact that the inflation is eating up more of a person's savings. They need to get that under control. That means higher interest rates. But on the other hand, you're seeing them slow down, which ought to put less price pressure. That means they could slow down. So that's going to be the debate. I think we need a few more months to see whether it's just a trend or not.
All right. Of course, that's the Bank of America CEO, Brian Moynihan, who also said that they had to slow down hiring with fewer workers leaving. They're managing headcount, moving investment bankers. They're hiring in private banking. So, I'm just wondering what this means. I don't know. You add it up. You cover this space. We will get earnings come January. How do we take this forward?
This tells you all of these executives, all of these senior managers are neck deep in daily, weekly meetings, planning for the year ahead and what they're seeing. They're not quite thrilled with what's been put in front of them, and that is reflected in their messaging right now.
I don't mean to ask you why the markets are moving, but I'll go the same question that I said to Jess. I mean, it seemed like these comments have a real effect on the way that traders are thinking about sentiment today.
They should, because look at where the comments are coming from. The CEO of Bank of America, one of the largest consumer banking operations in the country. The CEO of Goldman Sachs, the most important Wall Street firm out there. These people have a real pulse for what consumers are doing, what the average American out there is doing, and also what the big institutions and the big companies are doing. If they don't have a view into what the year ahead looks like, or at least the weeks and months ahead, that no one does. And the fact that they are willing to summarize all their conversations in and wrap it in this ball of negativity, I have to assume that plays some role in the market price action.
And then you do have Moynihan saying, you know, consumers still spending more than a year ago, rate of growth in spending though starting too slow. And then you do wonder ultimately how they're paying for it, so whether that'll add up. Sri, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We knew when this event was going on, we wanted to check in with you and see what David Solomon's comments and the others had to say and what it all meant. Sri Natarajan, he's a finance reporter at Bloomberg News here in our Interactive Broker studio. KBW Bank Index, by the way, it is down for 4 days in a row, and it's down almost 9% in that time. This is Bloomberg.
When cybercriminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness.
finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Most read story in the Bloomberg today, it is about the Yale professor who became an enemy of the Russian state over a list. He's a guest that we've had on, this individual, on our air in the past, and this story is in the new issue of Bloomberg Business Week.
With more, we're joined by Bloomberg Business Week contributor Rob Mandelbaum. He joins us on the phone from Brooklyn. Joining us along with him is Bloomberg Business Week senior editor Dimitra Kesanidis. She joins us via Zoom from New York City. This is incredible. Carol and I have spoken several times to Jeffrey Sonnenfeld. And, you know, anyone who listens to our program or watches Bloomberg television certainly knows his face, knows his voice. How did he find himself, Dimitra, just a few months ago, an enemy of the Russian state?
Sure. Well, you know him and many people know him, given so much work that he does with respect to CEOs and leadership and the roundtables. He has the ear of many CEOs around the world and had been contacted, if I'm not mistaken, by some folks saying, you know, this is something we need to look at, is what companies are pulling out of Russia and what companies are staying behind, and how will we make these distinctions right after Russia invaded Ukraine. So he got a little bit of play about this, but as we expanded our look at business school stories, he became somebody that I was focused on, and I thought, well, I'm curious to know what Jeff Sonnenfeld is up to. And I saw little snippets about some of this work, but nothing really that delved deeply into how this all became such a big list and became such a powerful list. And that is how he got onto my radar with this. And then I contacted Rob, who has been a regular contributor to Business Week, and asked him if he would be interested in taking a closer look. And I think that from the first minute, we'll let Rob answer this, but I think he was intrigued given that there were certain aspects of the story that had not been covered at all out there, and that really were very meaningful to, again, like, what is it that this list does, really? What kind of power does it wield? So I will let Rob talk about that.
All right, Rob, come on in. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
So tell. You would like me to talk about it.
Yeah. Tell us about, you get this assignment and you start looking into this story on Jeff Sonnenfeld. Tell us what you found out.
Well, I mean, the first thing I found out was that that the list itself was this, was actually something that came from his sort of correspondence with CEOs. It wasn't something that he started to do. It was something that they asked him to do because these were CEOs who had pulled out of Russia, and they felt like the business media, but not Bloomberg Business Week, was conflating what they were doing, actually pulling out, with, you know, other companies that were sort of, you know, sending thoughts and prayers to the Ukrainian people, but, you know, counting their Russian rubles and that sort of thing. And so that's where the list started for him, was just sort of trying to figure out who was actually leaving Russia and who was sort of making noise like they were leaving Russia, but not really.
It's pretty incredible because, you know, Professor Sonnenfeld is certainly associated with the list, as you write. But at the same time, he's got a research assistant and then all of the volunteers who ended up helping with this list. So who actually worked on it and is working on it, Rob?
There were at one point up to 42, I think, other people working on it. And many of them were undergrads at Yale and other schools. They were people like a guy I talked to named Franek Sokolovsky. And he was a freshman at the time. He was studying economics. He had actually heard about some of Sonnenfeld's earlier work sort of organizing CEOs after the 2020 election to sort of protest, you know, the overturning of the election. And he had heard about that even before he got to New Haven and resolved to work with Sonnenfeld. And it happened that this was the project. And, you know, he's from Poland, and so very close to Ukraine. He ended up getting so involved with it that he rescheduled his classes, you know, for the spring, some of them, for the summer, so he could work on the list in the spring. And he recruited a bunch of other students at Yale and at other schools to work on the list for him. And a lot of those people were Poles who spoke not just Polish, but Russian. And, you know, that gave this team an inside edge, you know, able to analyze Russian material that doesn't normally get translated.
I want to bring Dmytro back in a second, but before I do, Rob, so how did he ultimately then become an enemy of the Russian state as a result? It's just, were they so ticked off that he was accumulating this list? What?
It started with the list and then it became, it was mostly the list, but then he started doing some research. And he had published research, I think, in late May, indicating, you know, that if you were a company pulling out of Russia, you saw a benefit to your stock price, or you paid less for debt. Like, there was a market reward for pulling out of Russia that you could sort of tie to the announcement that you were leaving Russia. And he ended up on a stop list. This was in June. Of people who weren't allowed to go to Russia. I don't think that bothered him too much. You know, I don't think he was planning to go to Russia anytime soon. There are about 1,000 people on that list now. At the time, there were far fewer.
He wears it as a badge of honor, Rob.
Oh, he does. Yeah,
but
he does.
At the same time, there's a little bit of nuance to it because he won't
below
come out
the first lady above Mitch McConnell.
Exactly, and he won't come out and say that he thinks it's necessarily 100% a good thing. Like, he's not going to come out and say that companies should leave, right? He stops almost saying that.
It's a very semantic, yes. It's a very semantic distinction. But he won't, you know, you can press him and press him, and he won't say, you know, companies should leave Russia, at least not officially, you know. But he'll call, you know, as you talk to him about it, he'll call those companies that did courageous. You know, and
yeah.
I mean, the whole idea that you know, companies that leave Russia get an A grade and companies that stay get an F grade, you know,
right,
has implications, it seems to me, right?
Hey, Dmytro, really quick, just got about 20 seconds left here. What I love is I feel like there's going to be a second story for you guys in the Business Week team and Rob, because Sonnenfeld has another target, Saudi Arabia. Just quickly, 20 seconds. You guys thinking about this, perhaps?
We are thinking about it. We're looking at it. I mean, as I said, you know, with this is interesting because it started as a remit to kind of expand how we're covering these schools.
Right.
And this perfectly highlights just like the very interesting work that happens at many of these institutions. So we're thinking about it. I'm not quite sure what it's going to lead to yet, but you know, stay tuned.
Well, it's going to lead to, I think, us reaching out to Jeff Sonnenfeld again and getting him back on. Guys, thank you so much. Dmytro Kesanidis, she is senior editor at Bloomberg News, joining us from New York City. Rob Mandelbaum, he's freelance contributor to Bloomberg Business Week, on the phone from Brooklyn. This is among our most read stories, and it's in the upcoming new issue of Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg Radio.
I'm driving in my car, Turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Keep driving you crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
The funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just under 8 minutes left in today's trading session. Shortly, we'll check in with our TV colleagues, talk
Did
about the
minutes?
Trade. Oh, I'm
sorry. We got like
18
know,
minutes.
Yeah, we got like 18 minutes left, Carol.
Yeah, sorry. It's
okay.
Been that kind of day. It feels like it's moving fast and furious. Having said that, as Charlie mentioned, we're just rounding around the worst levels of our session when it comes to the equity trade, but pretty broad-based. Only utilities, when you look at the major industry groups in the S&P 500, actually showing some green today.
And it's not much.
No.
It's broad-based selling, a real risk-off day today. It's time for Drive to the Close. We're doing that today with Tony Roth, CIO at Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors, the investment advisory arm of Wilmington Trust and M&T Bank, joining us via Zoom in Philadelphia. Good to have you with us, Tony. How are you?
I'm good, Tim and Carol. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. I'm thinking about the program that Carol and I did last Wednesday after we heard from Fed Chair Jay Powell mm-hmm. and the mood that we saw in equities after investors pretty much solidified the idea that December, you know, that rate hike that's coming next week is going to be 50 basis points instead of 75. Look at the shift in tone since last Friday and the way that we've seen the S&P 500 down now for 4 days in a row. How do you explain it, Tony?
I think it's actually surprising that it's taken so long to get to these levels of drawdowns in the market.
Wow.
When you consider the labor market report that we had on Friday. So we were down on Friday, but not by a lot, right? And when you consider how bad the labor report was, and then we had the ISM services report, which is really a very laser
bad in meaning report. It was a strong report and wage pressure.
Wage pressure, significantly lower participation rate. And then on the ISM services report, which is basically another view into wages, we saw a very strong services report. And the market is dealing with the reality that we are going to have a persistent inflation problem specifically within the wage arena. And that is going to have an impact on where equities trade over the next probably 2 to 4 months. And equities are probably priced too high right now and need to move not just a little bit lower, but probably a lot lower.
And is that how you feel about across all of the equity landscape, or are there certain names in particular that you think maybe provide some opportunity in this environment?
Well, on a relative basis, there are things that we like. We like some healthcare areas. We actually like some financials. We continue to like energy in this environment. We like materials. But in an environment where we have higher rates and where profitability and pricing power are going to matter. Mm-hmm. Selectivity is much more important than what we've seen in many, many years. So take healthcare, for example. Healthcare is a very variegated space. So you have pharmaceutical companies, which are almost like staples, but they're staples that are growing at a nice pace. And then you have medical device companies, which are like big growth technology names, which are not going to do well in this environment. And so it really requires very careful selection as you go through this environment. But that's not to say that anything in the equity space is going to hold up particularly well over the next 2 months or so as we deal with the reality of a likely recession. And that also doesn't mean that we like bonds either, because we don't think bonds are particularly well positioned at the moment. And I could get into that if you like.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Well, when you look at the bond market right now, we're relatively 350 on the 10-year. And you think about where inflation is and how persistent inflation is going to be, which we think it's going to come down, but it's going to get stuck probably around 3.5% or so due to wage pressures and a few other factors. That means that the 10-year is still is low relative to where it needs to be in this part of the cycle. So we're probably going to get back up to the 425 range or so on the 10-year. We're going to see credit spreads expand. And we have quantitative tightening, which is throwing more supply into the marketplace. So for all those reasons, even though a lot of people like to think that bonds are now very attractive because of the increased carry, they're not attractive in the short term. So are they a better evil versus equities right now? I think I'd probably actually rather put my money into equities than bonds right now, given those factors.
Yeah, it's an interesting predicament. And I do feel like at this point, despite the risk-off trade that we've seen certainly so far this week, we did see a rally just a couple of weeks ago. We saw a Fed rally thanks to Jay Powell. I do feel like we are in a universe where, Tony, you know, volatility, you know, and uncertainty is one thing that we can kind of count on, right? We just don't quite know if we're going to be in a recession in the U.S., what kind of recession it might be, what's the Fed ultimately going to do, because the economic data continues to be mixed. We just heard from big bank CEOs, our exclusive interviews, thanks to our Sonali Basak, you know, with the likes of Goldman Sachs CEO and others, where the tone does feel kind of negative in terms of the outlook. But, you know, you talk to another CEO, and we've had a lot on our air, Tim and myself, and they seem to still be upbeat despite some of the undercurrents and the narrative that's out there. So is it safe to say that we could kind of go either in a better direction or worse direction at this point? Is it kind of like a 50-50 bet here?
Well, I think that it's a 50-50 bet, and the question is, will we have a recession or not? But we are going to have weakening regardless. I think that everybody, pretty much, there's a consensus out there that we're going to experience economic weakening. We're already seeing core goods roll over. We're seeing significant weakness in shelter, housing, which is going to find its way into the CPI data, which is a good thing. We are seeing some capitulation in certain areas of the service sector, notwithstanding $10,000 for Taylor Swift tickets, which maybe you can resell them for $20,000.
Yeah, that's a unique case, though, right? We can all agree that that's a unique case.
Yeah, but you know, across services, you are starting to see some breakdown. And if you look at the consumer is now at a point where they are approaching exhaustion. So the consumer is blowing through their savings. They're getting deeper into consumer credit. They're getting deeper into consumer credit in an environment where rates are higher than they've seen in a long time. And that means that the consumer is going to have to slow down on the services side as well. So all of that is happening. All of that is going to lead to economic weakening. The only question is, how bad will it get, and will it actually be a real recession?
Okay,
in
just
our view, we will. Go ahead.
Go ahead, please. 30 seconds.
I was just going to say, we do think we'll have a recession, but we don't think it's going to be one accompanied by millions of job losses. Probably maybe up to a million job losses scattered across the economy. And then at the end of the day, we think this Fed is very concerned around the third rail GDP. So as long as the inflation rate comes down to, you know, call it somewhere around 3.5 or below by the middle of next year, the Fed is going to be very active to back down rates in order to not cause too deep a recession.
I thought it was interesting what you said about how many job losses, especially when we've had conversations where people say, yeah, we can have a recession, but the labor market can still be kind of ticking along here. Tony Roth, thank you. Chief Investment Officer at Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors, the investment advisory arm of Wilmington Trust and M&T Bank.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us live on YouTube and now also on Bloomberg Quick Take.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie's based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Heard, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.